The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, welcome, good morning. Well, let's make this as simple as possible. We've talked about it for 2 years now. And going to try to simplify it as much as possible. A lot of the mainstream media, you're looking at right now that even on Fox News, the top headline is Giuliani denies saying no collusion whatsoever in campaign, but says Trump wasn't involved. He said, I didn't say there wasn't collusion. I'm saying Trump wasn't involved. Well, he didn't give any specifics. What he's doing is a personal lawyer saying, I don't know what else happened there, but I know my client didn't do anything. He's his personal lawyer, not the campaign lawyer. Be interesting to see whether he revises that statement today. But he provided no evidence that there was any collusion. The big story yesterday was not what Giuliani said, even though that's what it seems like all of the media is really covering. To me, the story of yesterday was the report, and John Solomon came out with it on the Hill dot, from the Hill.com, and then Catherine Herridge came out with the story on Fox News. There's a headline, Department of Justice official Bruce Orr shared intel from the dossier and the dossier author in 2016 with prosecutors now on the Mueller team. For those people who haven't kept up with it or you wonder if things have changed, Robert Mueller was appointed in order to look to see if Donald Trump or anybody in his campaign colluded with the Russians to hack into the election, or it has now become hack into the DNC, and or change help change the outcome of the election, whichever one you wish to choose. Right, but it, yeah. But the official notification is he was supposed to be looking into whether Donald Trump colluded with the Russians or the campaign to change the outcome of the election, however he would possibly do that. What we have found out over the last 2 years, even, you know, since, well, a year and a half, since Robert Mueller was appointed, is that the only type of collusion that you could find, as we have pointed out before, is that the Hillary campaign and the DNC paid a law firm, funneled money through a law firm, who funneled that money to another organization, which was called Fusion GPS, who then funneled the money to Christopher Steele, a former British spy, who then, whatever he did with the money, went and got what is now considered, I think, in most areas as false evidence, completely unverified, but false evidence against Donald Trump in order to destroy the election, his chances of winning the election, and then when that couldn't be done, destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election. Now, that information from the Russians was put into what is called a dossier and was used in order to get a secret warrant against the Trump campaign in order to find out and figure out what Trump was doing. What we found out yesterday, as Catherine Herridge writes, details about Justice Department official Bruce Orr's meetings with the author of the salacious anti-Trump dossier were shared by Orr with his expansive circle of contacts inside the department, including senior FBI leadership and officials now assigned to special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Orr gave a closed-door transcribed interview in last August, sharing details of his 2016 meetings with British ex-spy Christopher Steele, who authored the dossier later used to secure a secret surveillance warrant for a Trump campaign aide. The interview was part of a Republican-led oversight and Judiciary Committee probe. In a series of questions about his meetings with Christopher Steele, including one on July 30th, 2016, and who he shared the information with. Fox News has confirmed. The OR transcript stated Andy McCabe, yes, met with him, and Lisa Page and provided information to him. I subsequently met with Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, and another FBI agent. I also provided this information to people in the criminal division, specifically Bruce Schwartz, Zahib Ahmed, and Andrew Weissman. Andy is Andrew McCabe, the former FBI deputy director and acting director who left the bureau after the Department of Justice Inspector General concluded he lied about his role in a media leak about the Clinton Foundation on the eve of the 2016 presidential election. His case is now with the U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C., former FBI agent Peter Strzok and lawyer Lisa Page, whose anti-Trump text emerged after the election, left the bureau last year. Page got Page quit. Strzok got fired. The FBI asked Fox News not to disclose the name of the other agent who had met with Orr. So what you have here, let me see, and it's the Andrew Weissman, who was part of the, who was the deputy of, you know, to Mueller right now. And he was briefed way before they went after the FISA warrant in October of 2016. In July and August of that year, all the senior FBI was briefed on the fact that the dossier was done by Christopher Steele, and it was it was financed by the Hillary campaign and the DNC. They apparently were told that in the summer of 2016. Now, that is huge news because it goes to the heart of the matter that 3 months later, 3 months later, is when they went to the FISA court and didn't specifically say, and they knew all that time. It goes to premeditation and motivation.
Well,
and intent, excuse me.
And also the fact that they approached the FISA court and petitioned for a warrant before without using, and were not successful in getting that warrant, without using the dossier. And then later in October is when they added. That was the difference. They added the dossier.
Yes.
In October, and that was the game changer. So if you look at that, and based on this work from John Solomon, add to it that Bruce Orr had already told them it was politically motivated. Then that means what that tells me, if all is accurate and true, is that there is no doubt that they petitioned for a FISA warrant with false information.
Now, the other point is here that you have, number one, Andrew McCabe, who was also told about it. But as they say, according to the online bios, Bruce Schwartz was identified as a deputy assistant attorney general. Andrew Weissman was chief of the Department of Justice Criminal Division fraud section, who was told the origin of the dossier, that it was a paid political thing from Hillary. Apparently this is what we're learning now,
right?
Before becoming a senior prosecutor on Robert Mueller's team handling the case of former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, Zainab Ahmed worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of New York and took a leave to work for then-Attorney General Loretta Lynch at the Justice Department Washington headquarters. Ahmed is now assigned to Mueller's investigation of Trump. Well, you have an appearance of massive conflict of interest here.
Yes.
Because if you look at it, Weissman and Ahmed were part of the organization that was looking into Trump, to the point where they were briefed that the dossier on Trump was in essence a political document. was opposition political research.
Right.
The other point that you have here is it means it's well known, because you and I have always said that if you're looking at it purely from an investigative standpoint, and you're Robert Mueller, and your job day one is to look at the Trump campaign and Trump to see if Trump colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election, hack the DNC, hack the voting machines, whatever, be involved in the Facebook, whatever, whatever you're looking at, you're looking at where he would do it. Well, you have Andrew Weissman that's on his staff, Amid that's on his staff, right? Both of them, they know about the dossier. They know about it.
Right.
They know the dossier exists. They know the dossier. They know that the dossier was used to get the FISA warrant. Well, it should have led you directly to that point, should it not?
Yep.
They knew about it.
Sure.
It shows that inside the Mueller investigation, they knew about the dossier. They knew it was a political document. They were briefed on it. So any investigator, if you're looking for collusion, that would be the first thing that you would go to. You would go, Mueller would go and say, what is that FISA warrant application that used the dossier to go after the administration? We need to find out, and we need to follow and connect those dots.
Right.
If they don't do it, now we may never know if they do it or not, because we don't know what's going to be released from his investigation. But if they did not go on that path, then they didn't do their jobs.
Yep. If you don't include that part, that's the very basis for the investigation, then there's no point. How in the world do you do that, a complete investigation, without including that?
If you want to say it, that was actually the bombshell story.
Yeah, right.
Not that Giuliani is defending his client and his client alone. Mm. That's really not news.
No.
That's what the mainstream media is jumping on. Again, my major concern out of all the information that we have learned over the last year and a half is the rot inside the FBI, the Department of Justice, and intelligence agencies. That is my concern.
Right.
The rot that existed and still exists today in some form.
Yeah.
That's what I can, that bureaucrats believe that they get to run the place.
And that there is no, you know, there is no a counter check to
right.
that kind of behavior. That's what we've seen over the last 2 years. Yeah, this is a game changer here. This really does change everything. Because if they knew that dossier was bogus, and they still, a couple of months, 2-3 months later, went and petitioned for, and added that to the petition for that FISA court warrant, then they broke the law.
And as Catherine Harrigan Sit-Ups and writes on Fox News, the Orr testimony seems to contradict the 2018 memo from Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee on the surveillance warrant application for Trump campaign aide Carter Page, which relayed heavily on the dossier. While Orr's testimony indicated he met with senior FBI leadership in August of 2016, shortly after the meeting with Steele, the Democrats' memo stated the majority mischaracterizes Bruce Orr's role, overstates the significance of his interactions with Steele, and misleads about the time frame of Orr's communications with the FBI, saying Orr told the Bureau in November of 2016 about his earlier communications with Steele. It either means that Orr has lied a ton, or Adam Schiff and the Democrats lied in the memo.
Right.
Right? One or the other.
Yep. It's one of the two.
Or the third, they're completely incompetent.
Grossly incompetent.
Grossly incompetent.
Across the board.
Grossly negligent.
Right. Careless.
Yeah, you have to be following this entire story to understand the inside joke.
There. Yeah, so we're not careless. Yeah,
but right, isn't that what it shows?
Yes,
that they because of if they because that memo came out what earlier last year, Was it summer? Right. When was it came out? Summer maybe of last year?
Mm-hmm.
And they knew at that point, or knew what the truth was.
Right.
But it shows that, remember the Democrats in their memo? It shows that they either got it wrong or lied.
Yes.
That Adam Schiff lied or got it completely wrong. To the point where, because remember what he's saying is, November of 2016 is when they shared all the information, which would mean when the warrant was gotten, they didn't know about it. Well, that's wrong.
That's false.
False. Happened in July and then in August when they were briefed.
Yep.
So Adam Schiff and the Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee either lied or they are completely clueless or cherry-picked whatever evidence that fit their narrative. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Winter time can be tough on trucks. Corrosion often occurs naturally over time, but major causes of corrosion are multiplied during the winter months. While salt solutions on the road are essential to safe driving, they can also wreak havoc on your electrical system. The acidic nature of these chemicals will erode any exposed connections or wires in no time. These materials can also eat away at the frame, undercarriage, braking system, and any other exposed components. Add an electrical systems check to your preventative maintenance routine. This is crucial to help ensure the longevity of your truck's lifespan, especially during winter, when vehicles are more susceptible to corrosive elements on the road. Stop into a TA truck service to have your electrical system inspected by one of our trained technicians today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Top of the hour when I said worst negotiator ever, and I said Al-Qaeda, I meant Taliban leaders. Somebody corrected me and said Al-Qaeda's not Taliban. I go, did I say Al-Qaeda?
Right.
I meant Taliban.
Yep.
Right, so. Yep. I know there's a difference between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban.
Yes.
So just
trading the enemy, I think we could say.
Yes, yes.
In a broader term.
Yes. Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. It doesn't... thank you... Thank you, because the last thing we want to do is put out incorrect information out there
about Al-Qaeda.
About Al-Qaeda, yes. It doesn't change the statement on the negotiating position of the past of the former president.
Right.
So
something.
But wanted to make sure that we straighten that out.
Yeah. Yeah. All apologies to
right.
Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda.
We got that wrong.
And the Taliban. So thanks so much. I do know the difference. It was a pause in my cerebrum and cerebellum.
But, mm-hmm.
Thank you for the people who corrected me. See, but that's the point we say. We make any mistake, even if it's not quarter with story, boom.
Right. Some people may describe that as a neurological gas issue.
No, but if we say something, but we get corrected immediately, even if it's just, you know, it's by mistakes.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And by the way, we appreciate it, because that's the last thing that we want, because we know that the left will take advantage of you if you aren't 100% accurate on everything. And when we say that the debate has to be better from Republicans and the administration, it means you have to be accurate, and we have to be accurate too. So.
We do.
No problem. Right.
Yes, we're accurate 120% of the time.
It was not done intentionally.
No.
I was not attempting to praise or insult Al-Qaeda or praise or insult the Taliban with that mistake.
No. You know what I mean? We will insult them later, but not with that mistake.
Right, exactly.
So, there you go. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Cronin, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, on the whole Bruce Soar story that came out yesterday, that TheHill.com and John Solomon had, and Catherine Herridge and Sid Upson had on from Fox yesterday. I think when you break it down to what Bruce Orr actually testified to the House, it clarifies. Number one, it throws out what was earlier thought that the Democrats had in their memo that really, as they say here, the Orr testimony seems to contradict the 2018 memo from Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee on their surveillance warrant application for Trump campaign aide Carter Page, which relied heavily on the dossier, while Orr's testimony indicated that he met with senior FBI leadership in August of 2016, shortly after the meeting with Steele. The Democrats' memo states the majority mischaracterizes Bruce Orr's role, overstates the significance of his interactions with Steele, and misleads about the time frame of Orr's communication with the FBI, saying Orr told the Bureau in November of 2016 about his earlier communications with Steele, which means that gives the FBI cover for the warrant in October.
Right. Well, and the...
Go ahead.
The whole idea would be is if they were aware that this information, again, was bogus, it was false, and purely political information, and they approached the FISA court anyway.
Right. So was there any gray area here is a question that you're asking, and the Democrats seem to be always talking about the fact, well, they weren't sure, they thought it was intelligence, whatever.
Right.
You get to this point. Fox News also confirmed the Orr transcript stated, quote, "So when I provided it to the FBI, I tried to be clear that this is source information. I don't know how reliable it is. You're going to have to check it out and be aware. These guys were hired by somebody relating to who's related to the Clinton campaign, and be aware." End of quote. Then another quote as he continued, "I wanted them to be aware of any possible bias, or, you know, as they evaluate the information, they need to know the circumstances. I provided information to the FBI when I thought Christopher Steele was, as I said, desperate that Trump not be elected. So, yes, of course, I provided that to the FBI." End of quote. Mm. Now, and that, I mean, the Democrat memo last year. As I said, when that came out, now either the Democrats are completely incompetent with that memo to put out a memo like that, they're completely wrong, or they lied. Adam Schiff lied to the American people, or is completely and totally incompetent.
Because even if they're cherry picking what they put in that memo, that's still lying by omission.
Well, he said, Adam Schiff said in that Democrat memo.
Mm-hmm.
That Steele didn't talk to the FBI in November of 2016. All you had to do was ask him.
Right.
Who said it was November of 2016? Where did they? And they said the Republicans were mischaracterizing it. Maybe that's why the Republicans said, thank you for the Democrat memo. You actually verify, and we're not even going to tell you how much you verify what we're doing and how not credible you are, because we know. We know that Bruce Orr, because he told us. Bruce Orr said, talk to Steele on July 30th, inform the FBI in August. You're claiming it didn't inform the FBI until November, which means they got the secret warrant against the Trump campaign in October, and you're saying, see, that clears it. They didn't know. They thought it was intelligence. No, and then when you see what Bruce Orr said, no, this is a political document. It adds to the absolute bias. And the fact, and really does strengthen when Giuliani said, remember when Giuliani said that, look, somebody committed perjury because somebody signed those affidavits that this
right.
is intelligence
right.
and it's credible intelligence.
Right.
Well, you add the whole thing that Bruce Orr talked to McCabe and talked to Strzok and talked to Lisa Page and said, this guy, this Christopher Steele, hates Trump. He hates Trump. He came up with this information that was paid for by the Hillary campaign and the DNC.
Right. Keep in mind, Bruce Orr's wife worked for Fusion GPS.
Exactly. And now,
add to it all of the bias that we saw with McCabe, with Strzok, Lisa Page, all of that. Well, everything we've learned since then, you add that to it, and tell me how in the world you get to a point where it was a legitimate petition for the FISA warrant in October of 2016.
And now the other thing that blows your mind is that Andrew Weissman, senior deputy on the Mueller investigation, now he's going after Manafort, but mm-hmm. Mr. Ahmid is working in general for Mueller.
For Mueller.
And they both knew in August of 2016, they knew that the dossier, according to Bruce Orr,
mm-hmm.
without question, was a political document put together by a guy who hated, because that's what Orr said, I told them. I'll read the quote here again from it. I provided information to the FBI when I thought Christopher Steele was, as I said, desperate that Trump not be elected. So, yes, of course, I provided that to the FBI. So they knew it was a document from somebody who detested, as he detested,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Was that the word? Make sure we get it right. Desperate.
Desperate.
It was desperate mm-hmm. that Trump not be elected, and it was paid for by the Hillary campaign and the DNC. And from what we know, that still was the top piece of evidence to get the FISA warrant, because they couldn't get it earlier. Remember, they couldn't get it over the summer.
Right.
They couldn't get the first warrant.
What changed in the second petition in October
is
they added the dossier.
But you've got two people working on the Mueller campaign that know. They were told back in the summer of 2016, and they're going after Trump for collusion, and they know working for Mueller that in all likelihood, do we use the witch hunt or are we going to insult the Wiccan community there?
Mm. Well, and add to it from the memo. What was the tone of the memo? What was part of the talking points after the release of the memo by the left? The dossier wasn't a big part of it. We didn't put that much weight into it. Well, you added it for a reason, and there was a significant change in the fact that the petition or the warrant was granted after the dossier was added. They tried to just kind of dismiss it, saying, oh, that it wasn't that big of a deal, because we suspected at that time that they realized that more and more the dossier was being discredited.
Well, the timeline is huge. Changing it from November of 2016.
Yes.
That as the Democrats were trying to make the country believe that no, it wasn't political bias, because the FBI wasn't informed by Bruce Orr that it was political until November of 2016.
Right.
Now we know it was a full 2 to 2.5 months. Yeah, at least two months.
Right.
2 to 2.5 months before that they knew that the dossier was put together from somebody who was desperate to defeat Donald Trump, and it was paid for by the opposition political campaign and the opposition political party. Why did they lie or do that? Why did the Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee either lie or were so incompetent that they didn't know just last year that Bruce Orr, had told them, how did they get the November 2016 date if Bruce Orr never said that to them? How did they get that?
Did somebody else tell them that date? Falsely?
That could be the case.
Somebody else present them a false timeline in order to cover their base?
Well, you're still incompetent if you get to that point to put out a memo and you say that.
Yes.
And you're using a source that you don't believe is credible or may not be credible at all or has a political reason to lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it changes everything with
right.
the FISA warrant.
Right.
Everything. Because
right.
it means that they were told specifically. It wasn't a guessing game anymore. They were told specifically by Bruce Orr, This is a political document. This is not intelligence. This is basically, it's hearsay.
And the question would be, if you're trying to poke holes in this, the question would be, all right, is Bruce Orr telling the truth? Well, what motive does he have for lying? How would it serve?
Well, that'll be interesting to see if the Democrats come out today and say that Bruce Orr is lying.
Right. My question would be, if you're trying to make that point, show me the motivation for Bruce Orr to lie. How does that work for him? That would be the question.
Well, yeah, because to say that it was November 2016 doesn't harm him at all.
No.
To say that it
was... To go along with the other narrative.
Right. To say it was August means he could bring down everybody.
Yes.
And so why would he lie to bring down everybody and then get caught lying to the House Intelligence Committee?
Right.
What is his...
That would be a massive risk to gain nothing.
Right. What would he gain by doing it?
Even if... Okay. Chalk it up that Bruce Orr is a Trump supporter.
that would be it.
Okay. But would it be worth risking everything in lying under oath? Because he knows the penalty for lying under oath.
You're right. Yeah. He's seen it.
He knows full well. So that would be, if you're looking to poke holes in the Bruce Orr testimony, then the question is, well, where's the motive for that?
Yeah, because like I said, that was the huge news, not Giuliani defending his client yesterday. I mean, that was the big news because, look, I can't speak for anybody else. I didn't say there wasn't any collusion. I'm saying there wasn't any with my client. Well, that's what a personal attorney says. That wasn't big news. He didn't provide evidence of any collusion. Mm-hmm. This changes the entire timeline of what the Democrats, I'm assuming, then the FBI, because the FBI here's my point. Was Strzok and Comey ever asked those questions as to when Bruce Orr told them? Or not Comey, because Comey wasn't part of it. But were they told? Did Strzok ever have to say, well, we knew back in the summer? That took away the Democrats' narrative?
I don't know.
That's a good point.
I don't know if he was ever asked that directly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Sean in St. Louis about the revelations that came out yesterday on the whole FISA warrant situation in Christopher Steele and the dossier. Hi, Sean. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I think you've covered this before, but what they need to corner Bruce Orr on is that he was handling Christopher Steele outside of the direction of what the FBI had called Christopher Steele unreliable, or had he not turned over that information to a new source and used it as a second source for a different visa warrant?
Right.
So
that was later on. That goes to October. This is new. You know, when the FBI said we're not going to work with them, and then they used Bruce Orr as a secret channel to continue the communications, with Christopher Steele even after the election. But
is it not Bruce Orr's wife that works for GPS also?
Right, yes. Fusion GPS, as Eric mentioned. This is
so where's the collusion?
This. Well, yeah, that's why we said, though, the only indication of collusion that we've ever had, the only indication of collusion with the Russians is the DNC and the Hillary campaign. We like to talk about the things that nobody ever debates us with. That one nobody does because you can't, because you can actually follow the flow chart, which everybody has agreed is true. Nobody denies it. But when you talk about, Bruce Orr later becoming the secret conduit to the Department of to the FBI and keeping in communications with Christopher Steele after they officially were not, using him anymore, this is why going back to July and August when he told everybody, it adds to the premeditative nature and the intent,
right,
and the fact that they knew well. And when you see Bruce Orr's actual quotes, it means they knew, just like Comey said, they never thought anything was credible. Well, yeah, there's a reason. They were told, Bruce Orr had told McCabe, told senior leadership in the Department of Justice and the FBI, according to the information yesterday, that, look, this is a guy who's desperate to get rid of Donald Trump as president, and it was paid for by Hillary. You guys got to watch out. He warned them, watch out. None of this may be true.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Of course, biggest news is, what's going on with the non-negotiations with the partial shutdown. Where are we headed? And we'll get to that in just a moment, but this is really an offshoot of that. Kirsten Gillibrand of New York announcing she's running for president.
Right.
Exploratory committee. She's still got $10 million from her Senate campaign that she plans to use. Immediately, she was criticized by many in New York saying, you flip-flopped all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be pro-gun, and now you're anti-gun. You had a ton of conservative positions, a few years back, and now you've changed. And what she said is she's evolved. Look at my heart. But the one thing, and when she was against illegal immigration, mm-hmm. and now yesterday she's talking about, now she's come on board for driver's licenses for illegal immigrants.
Right.
And that just adds to the entire thing that we have talked about before of where Republicans should go, which is, the truth about Democrats and mm-hmm. that they're for sanctuary cities. They're now for driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. Sanctuary cities means once you get across, or sanctuary state like California, once you get across, we'll do everything so you can stay. We want you to stay. We believe, our thought process is, if you get across the border, then you get to stay in the United States, and we'll give you a driver's license. We'll give you welfare if you need it. We will give you free medical care mm-hmm. if you want it. All these things are yours if you get across the border. If you get across the border, we want you to stay. An offense is bad, and that's immoral. Well, I'm sorry, if you add, you may not say it, but if you add one and one together, you still get two.
Yeah.
And that is the proof that they are for open borders. And we have said that the Republicans ought to nail them to the political wall on that. Back them into a corner. Force them to answer the questions. We have an example of that. It doesn't come from a politician, but it came from Brett Berry yesterday when talking to House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, who in this interview, we're going to play a short portion of it, disagrees with Nancy Pelosi that a wall is immoral.
Mm.
Disagrees with Bob O'Rourke, as we're now calling him.
Mm-hmm.
We realize that Robert Francis was too formal.
Yeah, right.
He's a man of the people. Bobby.
Yeah. Skateboard Bob.
Skateboard Bob.
Mm-hmm.
He disagrees with skateboard Bob. Now, you're gonna hear this when it comes to that a wall is racist
mm-hmm.
and part of a racist myth. And this is really interesting because we think that Brett Baer got him off his game. Because at one point, you'll see this intermixed with it. In one sentence, you can tell he's insulting Trump, and then the next minute you got to realize, oh no, he's now going against the Democrats. Then he realizes it in his head, so he's got to go after Trump again. Then he realizes, okay, but he disagrees with this. But he's all over the place. But he even got to the point of it, and this is why we know it was more than just the fact that Brett Baer got him off his game, because he didn't give the typical non-answer. When asked about the border wall being immoral, he said, no, a wall's not immoral unless it's used as a prison to keep people in. And as far as we know, correct us if we're wrong on this, as far as we know, the wall was not created to keep Barbara Streisand from leaving.
No, it was not. In fact, it may make her leave.
So, from what I know, we are not attempting to force people to stay in the United States. So I want to play this here, and I'm happy that Kirsten Gillibrand came out and said what she believes, that that the illegal immigrants should have driver's licenses, because when you put it all together, they should have driver's licenses. They should have free medical care. They should be able to get welfare. They should be able to stay in this country if they wish to stay in this country, and we won't cooperate with the federal government to deport them. Then they're not for any type of border security.
Right.
Because their whole point is, we're giving you the ultimate incentive. Get across however you can, and we'll do everything to keep you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that really? Anybody really buy into the fact that that's border security? No. We all know it. Let's not be children. Let's be adults. That means you're for open borders. You want everybody to come across.
Yes.
The thing here about Steny Hoyer is, maybe Steny is one of the few Democrats that still believes that we should have illegal immigration, but doesn't believe he can get away with saying it most of the time. But he does believe it, as Democrats did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. The new Democrats don't, as we know. Ocasio-Cortez doesn't. The O'Rourke's, the skater Bob O'Rourke's don't.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe some of the old guard still does a little bit. So maybe that's why it's coming out. Or they never really did believe in it, but they believe they can't politically sell it right now, as the New York Times pointed out. That's the worry of the Democrats right now, is you can't say the border security is immoral. Nobody's going to buy it. Everybody understands it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't sit there and say, you know, that we're for border security and then support sanctuary cities, support welfare, support health care, support driver's licenses, all for illegal immigrants. You can't sell it to the American people. They know you're not being honest. And as we have stated all along, the problem is the only people having the honest debate when it comes to illegal immigration is Republicans and conservatives. Democrats and liberals will lie to you. Now, some of the new ones won't. Or they won't lie to you as much. They may not come right out and say the term open borders, but they will promote everything that is about keeping you in this country if you're an illegal immigrant. But let's play this audio cut. This is Brett Baer with Steny Hoyer. And he starts out with Steny Hoyer. And I believe this is one about the fence being immoral. Here we go.
Look, I don't think this is an issue of morality. It's an issue of does it work? And Senator Cornyn, Senator Graham, other members of the United States Senate have put in question whether a wall works, whether that is the best way to secure the border. Now, are some restraints? We've supported substantial restraints. We've supported fencing. We've supported other technologies. So my own view is, this is not an issue of morality. A wall is immoral if it tries to imprison people who shouldn't be in prison.
Okay.
That protects people is not immoral. I think the issue is whether it works.
You have all kinds of Democrats speaking out about the wall.
Yes.
Beto O'Rourke, congressman who may be running for president, who knows, said that wall in itself is a racist reaction to a racist myth that does not reflect the reality of this country at all. Do you think a wall or barrier is racist?
Look, Brett,
Listen, Mr. Leader, here's the bottom line.
I don't talk in those terms. Yeah. I don't think that's the way we ought to look at it. Again, the reason I mentioned Republican senators and House members and the fact that the House didn't bring a bill to the floor until there were 10 days left in the year is because there are an awful lot of people who just believe a wall in and of itself will not work. And okay. The wall is not the best place to spend money. That's what I believe.
So for the people who are living in those border states, especially with some barrier that has been constructed, would you remove those existing barriers because you say they don't work?
No.
So they work there.
Brett, let me tell you, say the people who live on the border area, you talk to the people along the Rio Grande, but particularly a lot of towns that have commerce back and forth on a regular basis and have no problem. That's why Senator Cornyn is not a huge advocate of the wall. And you can ask him and read his quotes. I'm not saying he's not supporting the president in building the wall.
So they work some places.
Whether he, obviously, they work some places. But the president wanted to first build a wall, apparently 1,954 miles of, and he changed that very substantially. And the debate ought to be not on morality or racism. I will say that we're not pleased with some of the rhetoric that has come about dealing with those coming across the border. And we think some of that rhetoric was, in fact, racist. We think some of that rhetoric was to inflame and was not based upon facts. But having said that, we're prepared to work with the president to make sure our borders are secure, and that's the important point.
Last
but
thing, Mr.
We ought not to do it in an environment that he's created of this shutdown of government. It's not helpful.
Last thing. Why not give a lump of money, whatever that number is, a compromise amount, to the Border Patrol and say, you do what you think is the best way to secure America. If it includes a wall or a barrier or slats or whatever you want to call it, why not do that? Why is there not a compromise position here? And how long is this going to last?
Look, I think there can be a compromise position. I don't know whether the Border Patrol or some commission or the governors of the four border states working together. There are two Democrats, two Republicans. There are all sorts of alternatives that we could pursue, I think, to come up with a consensus solution to achieve the objective I think we all want to achieve, and that is a secure and safe border for our country and for our citizens.
Show me where you're willing to compromise.
Yeah, where is that?
By the way, in earlier you also talked about that they're willing to compromise. They're not willing to compromise. So show us where the compromise is. Show us where you're willing to compromise. Show us. There is no place. The only person who's compromised here is the president. It's supposed to be $25 billion. Mm-hmm. Now they're down to $5.7 billion. President probably would take $3 billion. They won't even do that.
No, they're not going to do that. They've already said.
Right.
Speaker Pelosi, not going to give him a dime for the wall.
But it's so funny because one thing, the wall doesn't work. Well, doesn't it work in some places? Well, yeah, it works in some places. So it does work in some places.
Right.
He's all over the place. But the interesting thing is he did denounce the fact that a wall is immoral. A
right.
wall is not immoral, only if it keeps people in, and a wall is not racist. So we wonder if he's going to back off later on today, whether he's going to be taken to the woodshed by Nancy Pelosi over this.
Or maybe already has been.
Yeah.
But the idea is, if you look, and while he seems a bit flustered and all over the place, those answers were deliberate. He didn't give the non-answer, which you might get in the case of being flustered. He was giving very deliberate answers, which sounded at least thoughtful when he talks about, well, no, they're not immoral unless they're holding people in that shouldn't be held in. All right? So that's a big deal, coupled with the fact that the New York Times and that story that came out saying that the Democrats are, you know, basically not happy with Pelosi saying the wall is immoral. That you can't say that because they know a significant part of their base supports border control.
Now, either he was talking out of turn and he will be taken to the woodshed over this, or does the White House look at this and is there a thought process in the White House that there is some breakdown inside some of the Democrat ranks? That they are getting pressured, that, look, this is an opportunity to deal with the president and get something back for what the American people actually want, the vast majority. and you could make it a win-win. You know, which one is it? Does the president sense it? Because look, that was the first break that we have seen from a major Democrat leader,
right,
in saying that it wasn't immoral and it's not racist. Those are the two things that the Democrats have been pounding, and now you've got the number two in the House stating that's not the case. On the other hand, you have President Trump, who last Friday, 6 days ago, I think a lot of us thought, oh, they're going to make a deal but they're going to make this a national emergency because they can't make a deal. Now the whole national emergency thing, you haven't heard anything on that in the last 36 hours, and many of the media reporting, including the Wall Street Journal, that's now off the table. They're not going to do it because it would be a protracted court fight. So where do they go?
Yeah, does the president already know? I mean, even before Steny Hoyer said that, is he already aware that there is some, you know, a break in the ranks? I mean, you're talking about one step down from Pelosi here, which is significant. That's why we bring it up. That's why his comments actually mean something, again, barring any kind of walking back of those comments, some kind of apology. If the White House was aware of that, you know, because the AP reporting the other day that the president was, you know, looking to reach out to rank and file Democrats and maybe freshman Democrats in the House. There's no reason to believe that Steny Hoyer had a conversation with Trump, but does the president already know? Was he aware, right, that you know, with the everybody below Pelosi and even maybe some in the Senate are looking at this going, look, we can't hold this position because our rank and file constituents are not going to support it. I don't know.
And because this is 2019, I need to make this clear. I was not talking literally. I don't believe that Nancy Pelosi actually will take him out to a woodshed and spank him.
Although it's possible.
Anything is possible. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue had praise for the farm bill passed by Congress, although he said it missed an opportunity to strengthen work requirements for SNAP recipients.
Despite this omission, I recommended to the president to sign the farm bill because I knew and I communicated to him that I believe we could make improvements to SNAP through the regulatory process.
He especially pointed to a regulation that allows states to grant work waivers to millions of people who receive SNAP benefits.
Our proposed rule limits the availability of these waivers for states and promotes work and self-sufficiency in the SNAP program. The proposal restricts waivers to areas where the unemployment rate exceeds 7%, which is when jobs are truly hard to find.
Acting Deputy Undersecretary Brandon Lipps says the full details will be forthcoming.
The rule will be published in the Federal Register. I don't have the exact date on that yet, but from that date, individuals will have 60 days to comment on what's contained in that.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And the other news out there was the Bruce Orr story that we found out that the FBI and the Department of Justice, Andrew McCabe, all the major players in the FBI, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, were all briefed by Bruce Orr. They knew in the summer of 16 that Christopher Steele was determined to... You know, Christopher Steele, who provided the dossier material, was determined to defeat Donald Trump, and he told everybody, this news came out yesterday, all the major players told them that, warned them, look, I can't verify any of this, and all the parties involved are anti-Trump.
Yes, and he did so in August
in
of 2016.
August, not in November 2016, as the Democrats tried to make people believe.
Here's your forecast.
We have an area of rain and mixed precip in the nation's heartland. Near St. Louis, all rain. As you get over to portions of western Illinois, it's all rain. But then just slightly northward in northern Missouri and central Illinois, look for that rain-snow boundary and a mixed bag of sleet and freezing rain. That system's all moving to the east throughout the day today, affecting portions of central Illinois, central Indiana. For Thursday night into Friday, we'll see portions of Virginia, D.C., central Ohio, and eastern West Virginia, all under the threat of some freezing rain. Move north of that line, and for Pennsylvania, New York, including New York City, look for all snow. And it's a fast-moving system. By Friday during the day, we'll see temperatures warm up and the snow and mixed precip not quite a problem. Mountain snow and rains continue to hammer the western U.S. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Deservedly been called every name in the book, and even some that aren't. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I just want to finish up here because of when we talked about the Department of Justice, Bruce Orr, the important thing that came out is he had told the FBI, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, Andrew Weissman, and others, in fact, Andrew Weissman and the other gentleman, Mr. Ahmed, who now serve on Robert Mueller's, staff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all told in the summer, in August of 2016, that the author of the dossier was desperately seeking to ensure that Donald Trump did not become president.
Mm-hmm.
And told them that the dossier information came from this man who was desperate to see Trump not become president and was paid for by the Hillary campaign and the DNC. So without question, they knew it. Remember last year when the Republicans came out with their memo and the Democrats said, we're going to come out with ours, we're going to come out with ours, we're going to come out with ours, and the Democrats came out with theirs? They said that the FBI did not know until November of 2016 when Bruce Orr told them. That means the FISA warrants issued in October of 2016 against the Trump campaign and Carter Page, they claimed that Orr hadn't fully informed them about the bias and prejudice of Christopher Steele and that it was paid for by Hillary until after the FISA warrant was issued after the election. We now know that the Democratic memo seems to be completely wrong, according to the information coming out from The Hill and Fox News in the actual quotes that Mr. Orr testified to in front of the House Intelligence Committee. That he was very clear, and we read the quotes earlier on the show. That's important because it shows that by the time you got to October, they had known for 2 to 2.5 months, without question, the political bias, the extreme political bias of the author of the dossier and those who paid for it. That this was political propaganda. It wasn't intelligence.
Right.
They knew it. And they got a FISA warrant based on it. They got a secret warrant based on it. That is the scandal.
Well, what's interesting here is the timeline. In putting it together, of the first petition for the warrant was when? June of 2016? And it was denied.
Yes.
August, now, according to the testimony, then you have Bruce Ohr telling top officials at the FBI this dossier wasn't credible, and it was all politically driven. It was all about not counterintelligence. It was all about doing oppo research, right? It was dirt. So my question for Bruce Ohr would be, I guess, was the writing on the wall that they were going to take this to the point that they did, and petitioning 2 months later in October of 2016, re-petitioning the FISA court for that warrant? I mean, certainly, I guess he would be aware that they were going to pursue a warrant and that that was going to be the key. And that's the reason he was telling them.
As he said, this is from the transcript. These are the quotes from Bruce Ohr. So when I provided it to the FBI, I tried to be clear that this is source information. I don't know how reliable it is. You're going to have to check it out and be aware. These guys were hired by somebody relating to the Clinton campaign, and be aware. He continued to say, I wanted them to be aware of any possible bias, or, you know, as they evaluate the information, they need to know the circumstances. I provided information to the FBI when I thought Christopher Steele was, as I said, desperate that Trump not be elected. Yes, of course, I provided that to the FBI. And so that's huge information. It was part of the major defense of the defense memo, or the Democrats' defense memo from the Intelligence Committee back last year, stating, well, no, he didn't tell the FBI that till November, which would be after the FISA warrants, the first FISA warrant was issued. But remember then, it's important to know that even after the FBI wasn't using Christopher Steele anymore, that Bruce Ohr continued to provide information from Christopher Steele after the election to the FBI.
Right.
Which is not the proper way to do it inside the FBI.
My question would be, is who directed him to do that? What kind of directive was that? Because Bruce Ohr was at the Department of Justice. He was, assistant deputy attorney general. His wife working for Fusion GPS.
GPS also, right.
Which is that connection to that direct line, essentially, or I guess indirect line to Christopher Steele. So my question would be, is that based on a request? Who was requesting that he keep that door open? But really, the relevant part here, I guess, in terms of any possible lawbreaking, would be the fact that he made them aware that this dossier was not to be trusted. And 2 months later, they used it as a part of repetitioning the FISA court for that warrant. And ultimately, they got it. In October 16th.
And remember then the report that had come out that, and I believe it was Judicial Watch that got it late last year, was it October or November, remember, because we had talked about it, that the Carter Page warrant, there was never a hearing. They just submitted the paperwork and got the secret warrant.
Right. And because we had asked about the rubber stamping thing.
Yes.
At the FISA court level.
Yep.
You know, so you have a number of names or whatever on these petitions for the warrants. And was the FISA court, were those FISA court judges just looking at it going, oh, okay, well, if this person signed off on it, then I don't have a problem because of their credibility. Of who they are, what position they hold.
Let's go to Jeff in San Francisco. Jeff, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Good evening. A couple things up front. It's a federal crime under 18 U.S. Code ... to pay a foreign national for information in an election, which is what Christopher Steele was paid.
Yeah, we've made that known many times. Yeah. A campaign violation in there. Yes.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to rehash that. So. Chief Justice Roberts is the overseer of the FISA courts. He needs to be brought into the mix and get working on this, because what we have is a pack of lies surrounded by a conspiracy wrapped in an enigma. This is the biggest political scandal in history, but it's not being reported. And as you recall, Strzok and Page, there were some text messages back in all the ones that were being reported in the news where they knew a FISA judge and they talked about getting him at a cocktail party so they could talk to him. So you see all this stuff with this new information, everything's falling into place. They went to the FISA court. They perpetrated a fraud upon the FISA court by either omitting evidence that they knew or mischaracterizing information that they presented to the FISA judges. And I remember the FISA judges coming out. This was, 9 months ago. They said, we're okay with the president opening this up and getting into this. They said, or one of them or two, I think it was a woman. She said, I have no problem with the president getting involved with this. And as you recall, the thing that Trump was gonna make public, and then he changed his mind at the last minute. This was about 3 months ago or so.
Right. Yeah.
That contains all the answers, and I think he's keeping that in his back pocket to where if this fraud ever came out where they tried to indict him. He'd just drop that.
He shouldn't be doing that. He's wrong for using it only as a political weapon. He needs, because when he was asked about, what about transparency, and we said the American people couldn't handle it. Sorry, that was poop for the peasants from Trump when he said that.
Yep.
You release it. But Mark,
which tells us, by the way, if he says he's going to, keep it for political purposes, that already tells us, well, then he is saying essentially, we don't know if it's true, but he is essentially saying to us there's nothing damning to him in that declassified information.
Mark Meadows sent a letter last year to the not Roberts, but the woman Judge Collier, I think is her name, and went through everything of the questions that they have. They want to know if the FISA court believes that they were taken, in this case. There's been a number of articles written on it. From what I just Googled it, I don't see it. There's been no response from the FISA court on it from this judge, at least in public. We don't know what has been said in private. You and I know that the FISA court rebuked the Obama administration back in late May of 2017, right?
We learned that they did it in the spring, and they that actually happened in just days, October 26th of 2016. When the Obama administration approached the FISA court to say that we didn't essentially pay attention to your directive that you gave us back in 2011.
Right.
In fact, we've been doing more of it since.
And so the FISA court rebuked them. But this gets to the point here, because this goes to the question of the FISA court itself, though. This and the fact of you want a secret warrant on a presidential campaign. And this is the one question. Why was there no hearing?
Right.
That came out from Judicial Watch, I believe, in November. I'm doing this from memory here. Why didn't you do a hearing on it? Why did you just accept the paperwork and not question these people involved in it? And that was apparently on the Carter Page first warrant. There was no hearing. Just went through, and I should find the article on it, but I don't have it here in front of me at the moment. Yeah.
Well, and that's the good question, is that you're not talking about a warrant for a terrorist, right, or terrorist-related activity or something that maybe the federal court or the FISA court is already aware of, continuing activity. You're talking about a candidate for the president of the United States. That's no small thing. How does that not deserve a hearing? How in the system would it not trigger automatically a hearing that's something that level, especially when you're talking about, a massive, high-profile
American.
Here
it is, from the American Thinker. It was astonishing, for example, to find out from Judicial Watch that these FISA warrants used against the Trump team were issued without any hearings being held, starting with the one issued with Carter Page.
Wow.
They admitted, the Justice Department admitted that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court never held a hearing on the Foreign Intelligence Survey Act spy warrant application of Carter Page. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. So here we go, another day. I mean, this is really going to be interesting because neither side, the president for a while there had the national emergency as people were looking at as a you can look at it as a threat or a bargaining chip, and now that's gone. The national emergency is gone. So what are they thinking? When we talk about Steny Hoyer yesterday, when he denounced or took a, I'll put it this way, to put it mildly, took a different opinion than Nancy Pelosi did on walls being immoral, mm-hmm. and Bobby O'Rourke's mindset that walls are racist, and he disagreed with both of them on that and said they're willing to compromise. Really?
Is that true?
Is that the first crack in the Democrats? We don't know. We'll see.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.